more Dirt and Sprague.
Do you trust someone who doesn't like a Pop-Tart?
Dirt.
Can I give you a hot take that might make people look at me and call me an idiot? I think Pop-Tarts are disgusting.
Sprague.
I used to raw dog Pop-Tarts religiously.
Dirt and Sprague.
I'm anti-Pop-Tart.
On the Fan Sports Network.
Hey, let's do this. Final hour. Dirt and Sprague here, Portland Sports Leader. 105.1 FM, The Fan. 1080 AM, the Odyssey app, live on YouTube.
You know, technology and stuff.
Got a lot to get to here in the final hours. I forget how to talk for a moment. A busy and fun and eventful first 3 hours of the radio program. We've talked about Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals. Wemby being here to stay. The streak staying alive in the NBA. Oregon and Oregon State regional baseball. Mm. And Caitlin Clark kind of sucks now. That kind of sums up the first 3 hours of the show.
Carla Late just went at her.
She did, dude.
Boy, terrible defender, that Caitlin Clark.
Not good. And then yelling at the coach on the sideline during
kind
the game.
Kind of a funny little setup, like Friday having all these me-bound Angel Reese jokes from coworkers who don't really watch women's basketball.
Well, people were taking shots at Angel Reese going into the game.
I mean, she's an easy person to take shots at. I will joke about Angel Reese from time to time. She was really effing good, dominated us, and they won by 20, and then Caitlin Clark came here and was,
you know what it
dog
was.
Crap.
It's a look-ahead spot for the Fire.
Oh, is that what
look-ahead.
It was?
It was a trap game for the Fire. They knew Caitlin Clark was waiting.
They were also shorthanded.
They overlooked.
Because they had banged up players.
Who does Reese play for?
Atlanta.
Atlanta. They overlooked Atlanta Friday.
The Dream.
Night. The Dream was coming to town, and they were dreaming because they were sleeping.
Dude, great atmosphere, by the way.
Yeah, I want a full breakdown. Can we get to that in a brief moment?
Yeah.
Because I did just say something got passed along to me in the last commercial break.
Okay. We have breaking news. Love it.
We have breaking news that as we careen, it is now June. I don't know if people know this. It is now June 1st. Welcome to the month of June, everybody.
It's my wife's birth month.
It's a big deal.
Well, she's the big 4-0.
The big 4-0 is a big deal. Are you giving her the whole month?
I might. She's downplaying this, and I'm like, what are we doing? And she's like, I don't want to do this. I'm like, I got to do something bigger.
You got to do something cool for 40, right? I'm going to go play TPC Sawgrass when I turn 40.
Kind of shot the moon on the Mother's Day.
You did. You went big for Mother's Day.
I gave her birthday gift for Mother's Day.
You did.
Went a little hard on the Mother's Day.
We talked about that on the show.
Yeah, I know.
Probably a bad idea in hindsight. Should have held on to that one.
I have an idea,
okay.
I think.
All right.
I don't know if it's good.
Okay. Well, we are careening towards the Cargo Short Classic, which has a tentative target date of June 20th. Don't worry, I have not forgotten about this. Isaac and Suk want to proclaim that there's no chance that this happens.
Oh, the event doesn't even transpire.
Over my dead body.
Yeah, you're
right.
I am
banging the drum over here to make the Cargo Short Classic happen. And I happened to walk out to go fill up my water in the last commercial break. And I bumped into the one and only Joseph Fisher the 17th. And he told me that he broke his golf hiatus of a couple of months because he's had a tweaked back. He hasn't been able to play. So he got out for a round this weekend for the first time.
I think he's a little too young to be having a tweaked back, but that's neither here nor there.
He says that he is feeling fantastic. He shot in the low 90s at OGA.
How about that?
After not playing for a couple of months because of a tweaked back. And then he asked me if 18 holes is too many holes because who's going to want to watch if we are able to film it for 18 holes. And I said, well, we're not going to do like a 14-hole challenge. What? No. What if it's tied on the four? Like, what do you mean?
We're walking off at the turn.
Look, if somebody doesn't want to watch the entire thing, they don't have to watch the entire thing. But he said maybe it should just be a 9-hole thing. And then he added the caveat, Danny, if you're listening right now, hello, good morning. Well, it's okay because it'll probably be over at the turn anyways.
Joe said that?
That was straight from the horse's mouth. So we got a cocky and confident Joe Fisher peacocking through the office during commercial breaks.
Hell no.
And it just reaffirmed my belief that this event is going to happen. And I'm going to talk to the one and only Luke Anderson, who has some course connections. And we're going to dial this thing in. June 20 is still the tentative date. But I just wanted to pass along a little trash talk from Joe Fisher.
Let me just add to this. So like the way this whole started, I was on Joe's side. Because Danny, when you get Danny fired up, which can be a standard, hey, how you doing? Or I don't like Joe Cronin.
Right.
He can be Danny.
He'll come at you.
Okay. Got me. And I was sitting there rooting for Joe.
Bird feet on your bug zapper.
You're gonna say literally any athletic endeavor.
Right. I could beat you in everything. And
I'm gonna go. Okay. Here we go. The last couple times I've talked to Joe or heard something Joe related.
Too much peacocking.
The honeymoon's over.
I might be flip-flopping.
You're flip-flopping to Team Danny now.
Well, Danny, he was loud about it, but I don't know if he's really barking much about this anymore. You know, he's going to go out there and he's going to play his game.
Going to go about his business on the range.
And as I've noted, and I think you've come to my side on this, or you will, I think Joe has far more to lose in this situation.
He was the sparker of the trash talk back and forth. There's zero doubt about that.
I found out on Friday that he stole Danny's golf cart last year at the Fangolf Classic.
Ooh.
I'll scissor kick his gizzard.
Danny had to walk from the sixth hole back to the clubhouse.
That's a bit of a hike.
Well, for a guy that tears his hamstring walking to a football stadium.
Yes, we don't ever do that walk. We commandeer a golf cart and we drive around. We do not make that walk.
That's a dangerous trek for that guy.
It's a long walk.
And Joe, I guess, did the whole like, and Danny goes, "Where are you going?" He goes, "Oh, okay, I'll be back."
Ooh, and he just left?
Never brought it
back. Never brought the cart back?
Never brought it back.
So we got some more beef here.
So man. I'm kind of becoming, it might be a Jack Ramsey's era for me.
We're going back, turning the clock back.
I might be rooting for old orangutan there.
Well, I just wanted to pass that along. Joe Fisher feeling very confident about his golfing abilities after his low 90s round at OGA. And so, Danny, the move is yours for opening Trash Talk today, if you'd like, when you get in. And we'll work on setting that date officially as June 20th, the Cargo Short Classic. Mm. We'll be there, baby. We'll be there. Let's get to in this hour of radio. I'll revisit a couple things from earlier on in the show. The regional stuff was fun over the weekend. And San Antonio, man, are they here to stay? And one streak staying alive in the NBA. But out of the weekend, I will admit my mind's on football. That's just kind of the way that it works this time of year. I was down in Eugene on Thursday. It was fun to be around some guys. Saw a lot. By the way, Dante Moore, delightful golf swing. Phenomenal golf swing.
He's good a quarterback. Tempo.
Yeah, you just never know. I mean, some guys
who's
play golf.
Who's the worst golfing quarterback? I feel like all of them, backups, starters, they're all good.
I've never seen all of them swing clubs. Tom Brady did have a moment where he split his pants on national television.
That was a great moment. Good golfer. It's a natural thing with them. It's the hand-eye coordination thing.
Yeah.
There's something about that position.
I'm trying to think of a bad quarterback. I mean, there's a lot of guys who I've
Allen,
never seen do it. Allen's
Mahomes,
good. Rodgers is good.
Brady, Rodgers, Dirt. I mean, you name it. These quarterbacks, they're naturally gifted.
That's my guy.
I just made my day.
Nobody else will give you a bigger compliment.
What do you want to talk about the rest of the show? I don't care. Do you want to? What do you want to? You want to talk about the NBA for an hour? I don't care. I won't even get to the football stuff now. If you don't want me to, I'll move on. It was funny to see some of the defensive linemen in there, like Amari Washington. They were getting after it on the range.
What does
to swing.
He look like with a club in his hand?
It's not going. The club looks like it's a toothpick, but the ball's not going very far because they don't have the proper, hip twistage that's necessary.
Did you talk to any
one.
Of them?
I mean, just briefly. They were all kind of clustered together, so we walked by and they were chatting. It was fun.
Dante Moore, legit 6'3"?
A legit 6'3". Well, it's also hard to tell because he's got the afro.
Wow.
So I'm guesstimating 6'3".
You got to take the afro away.
But it's hard to tell exactly how tall the head, where does the head end? It's hard to get a full glimpse of it. Mm. Anybody's also taller than me. So if you told me you were 6'3", I would say, yeah, you're 6'3".
Mm. One of the greatest gifts my high school coach gave me, listed me at 6'4", my senior night.
Thank you for that, man.
Like, what?
I will say that's the one, because I did get up close with Lanning talking to him, obviously, and every time I'm around him, I'm reminded of, like, dude, he's a lot taller than I remember. Every time I see him, I feel like he grows 2 inches.
Lanning?
Lanning's a bigger, he's a big dude.
He played linebacker.
He did. He played William Jewell College. This came out on ESPN, though, as we're now 100 days away from the start of the NFL. And I love, we do this every year where we come out with our August hot takes, where we give our bold predictions. Swags was what? There was going to be no new playoff teams?
No, like two.
Or only two.
Yeah.
Mine was that the Eagles weren't going to make the playoffs.
You were close.
And they flirted with it, but ultimately ended up making it.
They hosted a wild card.
I can't remember what yours, do you remember what yours was? Something about the Chiefs. Wasn't it something Chief related?
Chiefs will not make the AFC title game.
I think it was something along those lines.
No, because I did that one 2 years ago and they made the Super Bowl.
You had. I feel like yours ended up being right. I can't. Anyways, we like doing that. It's fun.
Yeah.
So I wanted to throw something. All the ESPN NFL experts got together and they came up with 10 bold predictions. And I'm curious to ask, which one do we put the most stock in? Like, if I had to ask you to bet on one of them, which one would you put money on? The Ravens being the last undefeated team in the NFL. That's a tough one. You'd have to go look at the schedule. That's one. Kyler Murray winning comeback player of the year in the National Football League.
Is okay. Time out.
We're on a 10-0 run here. We get a TO. Dun, 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 dun.
That's not a hot take.
That's not a bold enough take for you?
No, why is that a hot take? Did they win 9 games last year?
The Minnesota Vikings, I believe, won 9 games.
Okay,
yes.
And their quarterback was dog-ass.
Yes, he was very
bad. So if I just don't have a quarterback be that. They're going to probably improve. His numbers in the system should be fine. We've seen him have good statistical seasons.
He's been good in moments in his career.
Okay. That's not a hot take.
So we're throwing that one out?
That's terrible. Okay. That's like, yeah.
Mike Tannenbaum, that was your take. See you later, Mike Tannenbaum. Get that nonsense out of here.
NFL Comeback Player of the Year odds.
You just gave one of these.
Not today.
That's a low-T effort.
That's a low-T effort from Mike Tannenbaum.
He's the second favorite in the category. Yeah. You know who's first? Mahomes.
Yep, I'll allow it. Get him out of here.
Only because Mahomes got an ACL.
Also, I guess I would also... That makes it a little more compelling because Mahomes would... If Mahomes has a good year, he'll for sure win the award. Right?
He's more likely to be in the MVP with a good year. Kyler would probably win.
Has anybody ever won comeback and MVP in the same season? Did Adrian Peterson had to have, right? Didn't he have his 2,000-yard season when he won?
If he's not in 2012, the comeback player of the year.
He was the last non-quarterback to win the MVP, was he not?
Yeah.
Nobody's done, and that was what,
2012.
He had to have won.
Manning.
What? The guy came off a torn ACL, won the MVP, and that wasn't good enough for comeback player of the year?
Yeah, it was Manning. Well, that was Manning's first year with the Broncos. It was 55.
That's true.
55 tons.
That's true. Yeah. Okay, touche. I'll allow it.
Let me make sure. I'm pretty sure AP's MVP was 2012.
Make sure the years are correct here.
Yeah. Let me make sure on this.
All right, I'll allow it, though, for the moment. We'll throw that one out. Mike Tannenbaum, get that weak nonsense out of here. Abdul Carter, fresh off his beef with J6, recording 12 sacks on the season.
That D is just getting dropped in that nickname.
He only had four as a rookie, so you're asking for a tripling of the effort for Abdul Carter. 12 sacks, being a double-digit sack guy.
That's a pretty big jump.
Patrick Mahomes winning his third MVP. Back off the ACL, Chiefs bounce back, Mahomes winning a third MVP. This one is dumb. This is from Dan Orlovsky. The trend of defensive lines dominating the league will be continued. Like, okay, thanks,
what?
Tips. Thanks,
that's
tips.
His hot take?
That was his hot take. So, Dan Orlovsky, go sniff your own farts. That's pretty bad.
What's the worst take? Kyler Murray, comeback player of the year, or that?
That's worse than Kyler Murray.
Yeah, because at least you're giving me a name and
an award. At least you're giving me a player, even though he's second in the odds to do it.
Yeah.
It's not a hot take.
I'm with you. Orlovsky's is worse.
Wait, you're telling me defensive linemen can dominate NFL games?
You mean titles are dictated by NFL defensive lines? That's weird.
I've never watched football before. That is the most eye-opening thing ever.
Manning won comeback player of the year, and Peterson won the MVP.
Dude, I don't remember enough about the debate. That had to have been such an intense debate about MVP.
It wouldn't even be a no-brainer who wins the MVP if they did the same thing.
Because that, I believe, was the touchdown pass record for a season. Was it not 55? Yeah, 55. I don't think anybody's ever touched that, right? Isn't that the most in a season?
Didn't Mahomes match it?
He might have matched it. Yes, I believe you were correct.
But I think that's still the record.
55, yeah, and they're tied with it. That's a good point. The Lions will go from last to first in the NFC North.
But in dominant fashion.
In dominant
fashion. That's an important part of that take.
That's true. In dominant fashion. The Texans will earn the number one seed in the AFC and go to their first Super Bowl. Now we're cooking a little bit. That's good.
Now that's a hot take.
That's a take right there with a quarterback who we don't know if he's going to get the contract extension or not. Jonathan Brooks will end the season in the Panthers RB1 and have 900 rushing yards. All right.
That's a random take.
Random take.
Random take is a good category. That's a random, like, oh, we're doing Rico Dowdle, Dowdle Jonathan Brooks debates.
You got a 1-2, you got a tandem there?
Come on, Liz.
Fernando Mendoza will start within the first few weeks of the season. So by that, I think we're reading 3 or 4 weeks, the first month of the season, he will be the starting quarterback.
Although, to be fair to Liz, it says she's a fantasy football writer. So that's kind of a fantasy realm.
That is
Brooks,
a bit like
Dowdle difference.
Yeah. Go find your running back off the scrap.
You're
we'll
back.
Allow it.
That's a good take.
Caleb Williams will win the MVP. So we can grade them from boldest to not boldest. There's certainly a few that are not very bold.
Our guy Matty Bowen there, I don't know how bold or hot that is.
Where did he end in the MVP voting last year? Did he show up at all? How many guys show up on the votes tally?
Oh, I don't know how many show
Caleb?
Up.
Caleb?
Yeah.
If he's there, it's somewhere around 5 or 6, I would guess.
It would have been, what, 2025 MVP
award?
Yeah,
27
right?
touchdowns.
I mean, he had a good year.
He finally almost broke the record for the Bears of the 4,000-yard passer.
This is just showing the top five. Your top five are Stafford, obviously. May was in second. Josh Allen, third. McCaffrey, 4. Trevor Lawrence, 5.
He shouldn't have been in it.
No.
He had a good year.
He had a good year, but not MVP worthy.
Okay.
So which one, if I give you $20, which one are we putting, like, ooh, I could buy that stock? I'll buy that stock.
Oh, like the one you believe?
The one you believe the most.
12 sacks.
And this is, by the way, throwing out Kyler Murray and defensive linemen.
He's going to
those are out.
He's going to get 3 times the amount of sacks he got from last year.
It's a big jump.
Carter?
Also losing one of their best interior defensive linemen in the process, who's now in Cincinnati.
You know what? Of all of them, I'll give you mine. The Mendoza one's funny from a Daniel Jeremiah told me no chance he starts early. It would be right. hilarious if he started like week four.
Right.
Of all of the takes that I think is the hottest, I actually think it's the Lions because of the way he ends the take.
Yeah, in dominating fashion.
Parsons is coming back. Green Bay should be good.
Yeah, Green Bay's not going to
Chicago. She's saying which one is the hottest take or which one would I actually put stock
you
in?
You can give me both answers if you want.
I think the Texans winning the AFC and going to the Super Bowl is the hottest take.
Why is that the hottest take out of curiosity for you? I know we understand where Stroud is, but they get to the division round every year.
They win a playoff game every year.
So that's only like...
They've not been to an AFC title game yet. They lose in the division round every
but
year.
But he threw what, five picks in that game?
Five, I want to say.
As bad as he played, that defense was so good that I still felt like they could have overcome three interceptions four interceptions.
It was like two one-handed touchdown catches,
yes,
two from Patriots wide receivers that totally
it wasn't like they weren't close.
Let's remind ourselves of the box score that he had in that game.
And he was pretty awful. Yeah. I guess one of the worst playoff games I've ever seen.
28-16 was your final. He was, it was 21-16. 16 going into the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
20 of 47.
Ooh, that's too many passes.
212 yards for a 4.5 yard per average. He did have one tutty and four interceptions.
To me, 212 yards on 47 passes is like scoring 15 points on 34 shots.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
What?
How many free throws did you shoot, buddy?
What did you do?
That does not make any sense.
That's a good one. I can still see it, though. Like a hottest take? I'm trying to think of the hottest take. I think the Lions. I think the Lions. Because in dominant fashion is a – that's a statement, dude.
Yes.
That means they win 14 games. They don't get nobody's close to them. Like,
yeah,
that's
they win it by like
me.
Three games.
Yeah, and
they've
it's over.
It,
yes,
you know, before Christmas.
There's no gimmies in that division. I think that's why I'm with you. That's got to be the hottest one for me. Not that we'd be surprised because Detroit had a down year last year and they were above 500. They were 9-8 on the season.
Would you say week six is soon for Mendoza?
No, that's later than I imagine him starting.
Oh, so you don't believe Daniel Jeremiah?
I do not. I believe
I would put
Charles
the most
Davis.
Stock in Mendoza.
That's what
starting
I would.
In the
starting
first month.
In the first month.
See, I would too.
What
and
are
I
you waiting for?
I don't.
There's
think
also
be
a
weeks.
Big potential. Kirkers could get hurt.
Yes, I mean. He's old. He's off a torn Achilles. Like, yeah,
well,
dude.
It's not like the Raiders' O-line was fantastic. I know they've made changes and acquisitions and stuff, but still.
I don't know, first 4 weeks, but like if he's within the first six, it's a 17-game season. That's still pretty soon. That's quicker than Jeremiah said he'd play.
Yes, it is.
But Kubiak's already come out and said, dude, he's everything we've wanted and more. Like, he's already raving about him.
Yep, I'm with you on that
one. So that's probably the one. I don't know enough about Jonathan Brooks versus Rico Dowdle.
No.
So if I took that one out, I'd probably willing the most to bet on the Mendoza one.
They threw out their 10 MVP candidates as well, 100 days away from the start of the NFL season. And you would be shocked to find out every single player that was thrown out in the list.
Yeah.
Quarterback.
Yep. Who's the one that stands no chance?
I'll throw the 10 names at you. So these are their 10 NFL MVP candidates. Josh Allen. Right? In there every year. Lamar Jackson, he's got two of them. Patrick Mahomes, he's got two of them. Drake May, he finished in second last year. Justin Herbert, Dak Prescott, Stafford, who won it last year. Joe Burrow, who... did Burrow have an MVP?
No.
No. Came close. Could have won one a couple years ago. Jordan Love and Brock Purdy.
People think he should have won it the year Lamar won it, even though
because his
make
numbers
the
were great, but they didn't make it wasn't his fault they didn't make the playoffs. He was historically good that year, and I understand the point.
I don't know if Jordan Love ever puts up.
What's the most unlikely? It would be between Brock Purdy, Jordan Love, or probably Herbert, right?
See, the thing with Brock, even though they went over 500 without him last year, I think he's starting to garner the nerd community mixed with the...
My analytics love Brock Purdy.
Non-analytics, but ball-knowing community. I think he's earned himself a lot of respect for people of like... He might not win you a Super Bowl ever, but you're a good team with Brock Purdy as your quarterback. I think he's earned a lot of that cachet from people.
He's not a top five guy, but he's in that next.
Yeah, I don't know about MVP, though.
MVP, you got to have great numbers to do it.
That's phenomenal numbers to do it. And what does Kyle like to do? Right. Run the football.
That's the thing with Herbert, too, is just the idea. And I remember when Harbaugh was hired, that was the point a lot of people made of, like, they might win more games, and they've been a playoff team each of the last 2 years. They've been very good. But Herbert's numbers aren't jumping off the page. Why?
because they want to run the ball. That's their identity. That's what Harbaugh has always been. So maybe that changes with McDaniel this year as OC, and he kind of, you know, revises it and upgrades it, although he was the run game coordinator in San Francisco.
Oh, they're going to run the football. That's the priority.
Dak's not a bad bet, and I know I'm just tying all my bets to Dallas, which is a terrible idea.
But I would actually bet him of all these options.
His numbers have been, like, every year his numbers, like last year he had 4,500 yards, 30 touchdowns, and 10 picks. They didn't make the playoff. Those are good
numbers.
That's third in the NFL in passing yards, fourth in the NFL in touchdowns, like fifth in QBR.
Does he have a better chance in your mind than Stafford getting it back-to-back? Because I think I do think that.
I think that, too. Seeing a guy went back-to-back and hit another year older for Stafford, it just, I would bet on Dak before I bet on Stafford. But maybe that's a fool's errand. Anyways, 100 days away from the start of the NFL season. I always love reading that stuff and kind of reminding us that it's almost here, ladies and gents. It is almost here. A streak stays alive. We'll dive into that next. 105.1 FM, The Fam. We'll get to some numbers out of what happened this weekend. One of them very eye-opening for me here in a moment. There was something that was too good to pass up that I needed. I thought about having this be my FUP date, and I decided not to because I figured we'd get a little more juice out of it, squeeze it a little bit more, if you will. I'm sure you guys were glued to it because who's not glued to under 12 Kansas City youth baseball Memorial Day tournaments? I mean, we're watching it like a hawk.
I mean, at least Kendrick Perkins is getting ejected from tournaments for youth sports.
This one is one of the funniest outcomes that I've ever seen, and I have a lot of follow-up questions. Okay. So there's a video you can find. This actually happened in Oklahoma. I don't know why it says in Kansas. Oh, I think the team was from Oklahoma playing in Kansas City in a tournament.
All right.
And it's under 12, so the kids are pitching to themselves. And a kid on the mound, at the direction of his coach, decided to wind up to throw a pitch, and he threw a ball directly into the opposing dugout off of the mound. Which then led, by the way, there's video of it you can go find. So you can see the kid throw the pitch, and then the parents start screaming. The umpire doesn't know what to do. The coach comes out there.
I didn't expect that.
Dude, it's like he just chucked. He threw it hard, too. For like a 12-year-old, he threw hard. And over the weekend, it has been announced that the coach has been suspended for life.
Really?
And the player, a 12-year-old, it is his son, so it was the coach's son. The kid who's a 12-year-old, this is where I have follow-up questions, has been given a 5-year suspension.
Like from that league specifically or from youth sports in general?
Well, again, they're from Oklahoma playing in Kansas City, so I don't know what the
span in Kansas City?
Right.
Can't play him. What?
And everybody's like, well, was he going to come back at the age of 17 and dominate some 12-year-old tournaments when his suspension is up? Like, what does that even mean, Basil? I'm confused.
So are you not allowed to play in the city, or are you banned from participating against teams? Like, what if they meet each other in...
So they played a team from Nebraska.
Tournament.
So he was suspended, and he instructed his 12-year-old son to throw the ball into the opposing dugout.
What happened between the coach and the other dugout?
I don't know. That's a great question, man. Confirmed they completed a thorough investigation. They said, due to the sensitive matter of the issue and involvement of minors, no further comments will be provided. Oh, that's from the police department. The police looked into it, too, to see if they were going to file any charges. But every story that I've seen, it does not add context to how, like, where the suspension is going and how do you serve this if you're a team from Oklahoma playing in Kansas City. And I'm assuming a Memorial Day, just random get-together tournament. And how, like, if you're suspended until you're 17, is he not allowed to play baseball in any capacity until he's 17?
Now, did he hit anybody back and, or just go into the dugout?
Now, it does not say that he hit anybody. The film was on one of those. Have you seen, like, the Game Changer app where people will film their kids' sporting events and put it on?
Oh, I know Game Changer rather well.
Yeah, so it was on the, you can watch.
Do you pay $9.99 a month to watch your child's sports? I don't, actually. I have found a way.
Well, you're coaching in all the activities, right? In all the hoops?
It does. Sometimes it doesn't matter. And I was like, I'm not paying $10 a month for Game Changer, dude.
Yeah.
I'm out on that.
The way that we're shaking the pennies out of every parent in America is a bit eye-opening and a bigger story that's probably getting credit for. But it doesn't show the duck. So I can't. It does not say he hit anybody, but he instructed his 12-year-old son to throw the ball to the opposing dugout. And he's been given a 5-year suspension. And the dad's suspended for life. It means he's never coaching. A lot of follow-up questions. I just saw that over the weekend. That's pretty fantastic. Let's get to this. So this number blew me away. And it's just a reminder of, and you kind of brought this up earlier with the regular season, like maybe it does matter. So we knew going into the Western Conference Finals, what was the regular season record between San Antonio and Oklahoma City?
I believe it was four and was it
three and one? So they played four times. San Antonio won three out of four.
Okay, the fourth game was the one of the cup tournaments. They only played three times in the regular season.
Yes, three regular games and then a cup tournament game. And it was, well, you know, how much does that actually mean? It's a regular season. They're the defending champs. San Antonio's young. They got something to prove. Well, you fast forward to the conference finals. It's like, yeah, maybe that actually meant something. And then you add in the next level of when you combine. So on the whole, when you count the regular season and their playoff wins, I believe Oklahoma City ended up with 75 wins was their record, 75-22 mm-hmm. overall, counting playoff losses and regular season losses. Eight of the 22 losses that they suffered were against San Antonio. 36.4% of all of their losses this year were to the San Antonio Spurs. Their record against everybody else, including the playoffs, was 71-14. Mm-hmm. And their record at the end of the season against San Antonio was 4-8, which is just like remarkable to see a team do that to a defending champion who, analytically speaking, was one of the best we have, from a number standpoint, have seen sans like the 1998 Bulls and the 2017 Golden State Warriors. They were in that level of conversation. And this team with a bunch of 20-year-olds and Darren Fox and Harrison Barnes came out and beat them 36% of, like, handed them 36% of their losses for an entire year.
One, it talks about the uniqueness of trying to go against a player as rare as Wemby. I think, two, look, you're not wrong to tout the analytics of how good Oklahoma City is. I do think it should be always added. Losing your second best player, by the way, that's been established. We know who the second best player is of three of them.
It's not up for debate anymore.
Because the third one literally quit.
Yeah.
When you lose your second best player for the whole series, because I don't care about 10 minutes, and then like a guy who's come off the bench and then been inserted in your starting lineup become an offensive threat himself, you're losing two massive parts of the story there. So, yeah, analytically, they were up there.
How much time did J-Dub miss this year in the regular season?
A vast majority.
How many games did he end up playing? I didn't know.
I'd have to go look at his total games played.
Because it wasn't a ton, right? Like, he missed the majority of the regular season,
right? I mean, it's one of the worst hamstring injuries that we've seen.
Okay.
In total, he played 33 games. He played less than Wemby played last year.
Yeah, that's a low number.
So 33 of the 82, and then almost nothing going on in the playoffs. I think that's an important piece here, because to me, coming into today and talking about the Spurs, we need to give them their credit, talk about how amazing it is they're doing this as a young team. I can't get past how close they still were to pushing and stealing a win in Game 7, despite how deficient everything was for Oklahoma City.
Right.
Caruso was awful. Chet literally quit. J-Dub's not playing. Like, their second best player yesterday was Kayson Wallace. And Kayson Wallace is a good player. He's probably going to get paid this summer.
He's a good little player.
He shouldn't be your second best player, not if you're trying to win a championship. So
all that depth all of a sudden became an issue for him when it felt like their strength all season long.
And it was, but when you have to shake up depth to the point of your lineups are changing, your rotations get changed in a lot of ways, like, you have to kind of overcome things in the middle of it versus preparing for it. And I think there were elements of this series, specifically with Chet, that, like, if you're Mark Daigneault and you have Chet in your lineup, but he's playing like this against Wemby, how are you course correcting, right? Like, there's only so much a coach can do about that. A coach can't say, Chet, go be better.
Yeah, man up.
He had to bench him. He had to sub him out and bench him in the fourth quarter of a Game 7 of Western Conference Finals. Like, this sport takes too many hits from people, and I get why in some regard. The one thing about this sport that's true is this is legacy-defining stuff. More people are going to remember Chet in the Game 7 of the West Finals than the year they won the title. Because the year they won the title, fair or not fair, big storyline of that is what? Tyrese Halliburton
tearing his Achilles in Game 7.
And it felt like a crowning of the title more so than an actual great basketball game.
Right.
So
instead of going out and grabbing it felt like it was handed to you.
I'm more curious, one, what Oklahoma City's going to do this offseason. Two, is San Antonio going to buck the trend of NBA history of like, no, actually, we're just going to win it when we're 22 years old. And three, I guess I would ask you and every Blazer fan, when you watch this team play, and we got to watch them firsthand, right? First round.
Yes, we did.
How do you go about stopping and beating this? I don't think they're going to be some unbeaten dynasty that wins five in a row. I'm not going to go to the opinions that some people are.
No, we've done that too many times that we need to learn. Even though Wemby is unique, so is Jokic.
Yes, exactly. Thank you. Right. We all said dynasty with Jokic. And I know Wemby is probably better in some regards, but I'm not going to do it because you just don't know what the league. When you look at San Antonio, how do you build a team that counters this? What is the zag to this zig? Because whoever can solve that.
Right.
That's going to be the team that, like, oh, my God, look at that team. Yeah. They popped up.
If I knew that question, I'd be the next general manager of the Portland Trailblazers. That's what you have to come up with. We kind of saw teams do that. Minnesota did this, I think, to a certain extent, because at the time, the superpower in the West was Denver when they were coming up. And they had Jokic, and they had just won a championship, and Jokic was this multi-MVP that we'd never really seen a big be that dynamic offensively and run the show and shoot and, like, all the things that Jokic was doing and averaging a triple-double. And they built their team in order to stop him. Now, it's not been able to get over the hump in Minnesota, but Minnesota's had their success against Denver come playoff time because of the way they built their roster. Wemby's such a unique player that I don't know if there's an anecdote to it. Outside of simply being an elite, dominant three-point shooting team,
so the theory of
not having to go to the paint as often,
yes,
like that's the only thing in my stupid little pea-sized brain that I could come up.
That's
with.
How the Knicks, in my opinion, beat them.
They have to shoot the ball well from three.
Towns
has to
specifically
space the floor, be at the three-point line, and say, Wemby, yes. If you're gonna let me shoot, I'm gonna kill you all day.
Yeah, if Brunson's gonna drive and Wemby is gonna come down for help, like
here's
that's where
threes.
The kick and the ball rotation has to be primo. And so, like. Yeah. I guess if you're looking at it from a Blazer lens and every other Western Conference team, we'll see what Oklahoma City decides to do because they're not going anywhere either, by the way. Go get more shoot. We were dead last in shooting in the playoffs.
Yeah, 28th in the regular season.
28th in the regular season, dead last in the playoff teams. That you cannot be running this back.
Be great, G.
And I don't care that you're adding Dame Lillard to the rotation.
That
ain't going to be enough.
It, but it's not going to be enough.
So, like, if it's a Trey Murphy, if it's a whoever, fill in the blank.
Sure.
That is my only counter is, like, is Towns going to shoot the ball well from three?
Yeah.
Is OG going to shoot the ball well from three? We know Josh Hart can kind of be limited from there, and he's kind of a do-everything type player.
He can get hot. He has his streaky games where you're like, dude, he made five last night.
Well,
what?
I think the good thing for San Antonio is, dude, I mean, Castle, just an annoyance for SGA. Castle gets to guard Brunson now.
Yeah.
That's going to be fun.
That's going to be a fun, man.
So if the Knicks can get shooting from Cat, and they can spread that out and be a little more. If Shamit's going to shoot, I think Shamit is shooting 92% from three.
Feels like he hasn't missed the entire postseason.
If that's who he's going to be in the finals, like I think New York legitimately has a shot here. But when you build your team out against Wemby, you have to say what's the best possible counter to this. Because right now, you saw it. Every team that wants to drive on that guy, it ain't going to happen.
Even the MVP of the league is pulling out and saying, nope, let's go somewhere else with the basketball. I'm going to give you a stat on the other side. I don't know if it makes you hopeful or hopeless, but I'll tell you what it is and explain. And then we got to get Blue Line Brandon's thoughts on the eve of the beginning of the Stanley Cup Final.
Oh, I got a prediction for
Who's
you.
Who's going to win it all?
Get
Blue
ready.
Line Brandon, we'll tell you next on the Fam. All right, last one for us here on a Monday. We'll get Blue Line Brandon's thoughts in a moment as we wrap up the show. Stanley Cup Final beginning tomorrow. Our guy Tommy Two Nickels found his way there somehow, some way without free T-shirts. Before we do, though, let me ask you this. Does this stat give you hope or make you feel hopeless? So it stems from, and I brought this up earlier in the show, for the first time in the NBA, we do a lot of everybody knows the number of this would be the eighth different champion in the last 8 years. So we have a different champion every year in a row. Seven was already the NBA record. Now we're guaranteed to get eight because the Spurs and Knicks have not been in the finals. And so you'll get another new champion this year. But it's also added that in the last 4 years, we've had eight different teams, so the max amount possible, play for an NBA finals. Denver, Miami, Boston, Dallas, Oklahoma City, Indy, San Antonio, New York. Those are your eight that would have played in the NBA Finals. That's never happened in the history of the league. If you go back a little bit further, you know what stretches we're on here? There have been 11 different finals teams in the last 6 years. And in the last 9 years, so within the last decade, 14 different teams have played in an NBA Finals. How many teams are in the league?
Yeah, right.
48, whatever your percentage is, nearly half of the league has made the NBA Finals in the last 9 years. And I ask you, Brandon Sprague, does that make you hopeless or hopeful?
Well, I think watching Wemby win Game 7 on the road and seeing Oklahoma City still be amazing, there's a lot of hopeless. And I've coined a phrase, we don't get nice things here.
Had a chance at Wemby, but we won 33 games.
Also Tillon Harper, and we won two more than the Spurs. But I look at the league as like, dude, it's as open as it's ever been. The talent pool is deeper. The way that basketball is played now, like it used to be run by just, and I know Wemby is a center, but like a back to the basket.
Yeah.
Hakeem, Shaq, right? You fill in the blank of these guys. It's such a different league now that I look at it and I say, yeah, it feels like we're pretty far away from both of those teams and what we saw in Game 7. But every year, we've been saying this now for how long of like, well, there's the next run. There's the next run. Oh, KD's going to win 10. LeBron in Miami, they're going to win 6. Like, yeah, two. Done. Like, those run, Tatum and Brown, oh, here they go. They won one.
Right.
Out.
Haven't been back since.
Like, blew a 3-1 lead. Like, as soon as we want to crown something, it ends very quickly. That's why I don't talk about San Antonio, Oklahoma City and use these 10-year run-ups. I at most go for 3 years.
I mean, OKC could drastically shake up the roster this offseason for all we know.
And you have no idea how injury luck is going to play a part. It played a big part in this series. Is it going to play a part next year for the top two teams? I don't know.
Does it play a part in the finals? Does somebody get hurt? You don't want people to get hurt, but does somebody just Wemby roll? We saw Wemby take a header on the floor in game two of our series and miss a game and a half of the series.
De'Aaron Fox is dealing with a high ankle sprain right
Harper
now.
Harper missed time.
Yeah, to me, it's just, it's really, as much as you may feel out of it, for the old hope springs eternal thing for baseball, that's happening in basketball. I don't know. It's not a really big topic for people, but you highlight there the last 4 years, you've had the max amount of teams be new.
Eight teams.
You mentioned in the last decade, what is it?
Nine. In the last 9 years, 14 different teams have played for an NBA Finals.
So there you go.
It's not even just the same, because I agree with you 100%, and I you have over the years convinced me of this, because I'm one of these guys, you see one and you're like, oh God, here we go.
I don't blame you for it.
Right?
You
just like, Jokic, how is anybody going to beat Jokic? And then everybody beats Jokic, and then, you know, the OKC was kind of that for a lot of people this year. So San Antonio, if they win the finals, will certainly be the next category of the team.
Yep.
And nothing is a guarantee, and we've learned that lesson too many times the hard way. Also, now back-to-back years, we've gone through the lesson of you don't really need to have been there before in order to know. Like, that used to be the thing. Like, OKC, I did that to them last year. Of like, yeah, but they lost in the playoffs the year before. They never even been to a conference finals. Like, they're young. They don't have any. And then they win an NBA championship, and here's San Antonio with a bunch of like 12-year-olds winning the NBA Finals potentially.
Oh, yeah.
So youth and inexperience does not matter maybe as much as it used to. I think it's a double-edged sword, though, of the idea of the NBA having some of these players and teams that seem unbeatable, even though the era would tell that that's not the case. And also, we haven't really sniffed one in the 9 years, and half of the league has. And so it's a double combo of that, the feeling of can you get over Wemby, and also 14 teams in 9 years is a remark. Like, if you would have asked me in the last 9 years what percentage of the league, just off the cuff, had gone to an NBA Finals, there's no chance in hell I'd say the number is close to 50%. And then you see the number and you go through it and you're like, yeah, damn, half the league has.
Would it be 14 of a possible 18 teams that could be there in a 9-year span?
Right, so a couple of teams have gone back. A couple of teams, like, you're dipping in a little bit to the end of the Warrior run, right, when you go back 9 years. And Cleveland, I'm sure, is a part of some of those. So you're kind of, you know, entering into that category of teams.
Yep.
But it just, there's that aspect of it as well of like, man, half the league has been able to have a lot of fun in the last 9 years.
Yeah, does it leave you a little hopeful? Not that, like, I'm not trying to say the Portland Trailblazers are going to win the West.
It leaves me hopeful that it feels like
curious.
The parity concerns in the NBA are not, and again, maybe San Antonio is the one that proves us wrong here. The parity concerns are not what they used to seem to be in the league. It has been a league my entire life run and dominated by dynasties. It was the Bulls when I was a kid.
And everybody's always told me dynasties are good for the league.
It was the Lakers, then it was the Spurs, then it was the Warriors. I mean, the Miami years. Like, it just, that's been my entire life with the NBA.
Don't forget the Bulls.
And there's, in the 90s, decade. Right? That was my whole childhood. The only thing I knew was the Bulls being great. And so there was never the feeling of like, man, we can get on that level.
Mm-hmm.
I will say the thing that did it is numbers like this and also Indiana doing what they did last year. Because I would argue Indiana did that, and maybe New York to a certain extent. Like, New York to me does not have an MVP candidate on their roster. And I don't mean to be disrespectful to Brunson. He's a hell of a player. And a lot of their guys are really good. We wouldn't put him in the category of, like, if you're fantasy drafting best players from teams in the NBA, how many are you taking ahead of Jalen Brunson? Right,
oh,
like,
man.
And you can feel like he's the most successful current American player. That's fine. But if you're fantasy drafting, who are you taking, him or Anthony Edwards?
Probably still leaning Ant.
Wemby.
But I'll tell you, man.
SGA. Like, I'm just saying, you go down the list.
These players are better than him.
I know.
But he has something unbelievable. About
I get
him
it.
That's definitely like, oh, my
God. I'm just
God.
Saying, them and Indiana last year are this feeling. Like, it used to feel like you needed to have a Wemby in order to have a chance. And I think we're now seeing that it, I mean, I would take him. It would be great to have him.
Well, yeah.
But you don't necessarily have to have a one-of-one player in order to win a championship.
Well, I think what you're more learning is, like, not so much the one-on-one, because Wemby is, like, he's different, right? But, like, to me, it's more, it's a little, it's NFL quarterback-ish.
Yeah.
I think it's not so much that you need a one-on-one. Like, there, I think what we're learning is how many ones-of-ones there are. They're just different. They're different positions, different players.
Or guys in a moment that could play like a one when you need them to play like a one.
Halliburton did this all last playoffs. Brunson is doing it this year and getting, and he's done it for a couple years, but this year they finally get to the finals. And then we see it with Wemby. SGA won the finals last year, and he was awesome in Game 7. I think it's just a bigger pool of ones. Now, you can say who is the one of all those ones.
Or a 1A and a 1B maybe category. Yeah.
But for everybody that debated Brunson and saying, oh, that's a nice little piece. Oh, he's pretty good. Hey, you can't win a title with him. Oh, well, okay. Well,
now you're in a title with him.
You can't even get to the finals. Now you can't win a title. Like, it's just always changing. And I think, to your point, the depth element of the league, and I know we have expansion coming.
I think that's only going to help. It's going to water down the teams to a certain extent.
Or maybe there you can make an argument that it'll be you're maxed out at depth now, and so two more teams being added to that pool make it worse. I don't know where I lean. I tend to lean it's an international world game, and the depth is going nowhere.
Yeah.
So I think, to your point, like, Wemby might be the one. Knicks might win the finals. And what do you say about Brunson then?
Who the Kalamazoo Kazoos take in that expansion draft is going to be wild. It's going to be wild to see.
Did you see we almost traded Drew Holiday for Darius Garland?
We did. That was a rumor out there.
The Cavs were kicking around Drew Holiday as the piece instead of Harden.
For Darius Garland, huh?
We would have got Garland.
Hmm. Who you like? We'll have more on it tomorrow. So I will hold the majority of your Blue Line Brandon thoughts.
Oh, I'll tell you my prediction.
Can you give me a peekaboo? Carolina Vegas, Tommy Two Nickels at home tomorrow night?
Yeah.
Who's winning it?
Give me Carolina in six.
Carolina in six.
Sorry, Vegas. The dream ends.
Put the flag down. Blazer fans rooting for it?
I think there's a certain section not rooting for it, weirdly. Okay. City's weird.
That'll do it for us, folks. Good little show. If you missed any of it, go check the podcast. 1051thefan.com, at 1051thefan on Twitter. Lots to break down from the weekend. Regional baseball, conference finals, game sevens, NBA finals, some NFL nuggies, college football nuggies in there as well. Loaded little show. Thanks for being a part of our Monday, everybody. Hope you had a great weekend. We will talk to you tomorrow at 6 a.m. The Firm, Harrison Marang, is next. You're listening to 105.1 FM The Fam.